Good morning. With your permission this morning, it's an unusual day. It's a special day. So I'd like to invite someone who has never been to the shir before to our shir, because it is her first yahrzeit. That is my grandmother, Aleh HaShalom, Esther Bas Reb Eliyahu. It's hard to believe that it was just 1 year that my grandmother passed away. And as many of you know, we were extremely close. For the past many years, she lived in Cleveland, so we used to go in the summertime right after school, and we would always drive there with the kids every year, even when they were very, very little. And she had a profound impact on my life. You know, it's interesting, there's a big push now in the world. It's a huge multi-billion dollar industry about finding out about your genealogy. Ancestry.com, and all right, everybody knows this. But for Jewish people, for Klal Yisrael, for us, it's innate. And for most of us, we don't need to go to Ancestry.com to find out what our Masor is. That's part of our identity. So my grandmother, Aleha Shalom, Masor was very, very important. She was the matriarch of our family. She was a huge, larger-than-life personality. You know, if you talk about work ethic, it was unbelievable. I remember even as a small child, my grandfather was an immigrant. He had a shmata business in the city, and they lived in Far Rockaway when I was growing up. My grandmother worked in the office side. She did the books, and he was out there selling to customers. She worked so hard during the week. I still remember, they had a sun porch. We would watch TV, and she would open the mail on Sunday because she never had time to read the mail during the week. All the mail would pile up. And she would have enormous amounts of company. My uncles, they should live and be well, both learned in yeshiva. And they used to come. They had tons of company, boys, and their house was very, very active. So Thursday night, her KitchenAid had more mileage than most people's Toyota Corollas or Camrys. So late at night, we would come in the station wagon. We would pile in, and we would sleep. And the house was always unbelievably busy, and she was unflappable. There was never too much to be done. She always managed everything. And then we spent a lot more time because a few weeks before my bar mitzvah, my grandfather had a stroke. It's a very significant stroke. So she had to FedEx the meatballs in dry ice to the bar mitzvah for Thursday night. So she didn't come to the bar mitzvah. And then my grandfather passed away a few weeks before my wedding. So like we have these unusual family. So after my grandfather had a stroke, so because I was 13, so my parents let me fly. Today, we've never let our kids do this. My parents let me fly by myself to Florida semi-regularly to spend time with my grandfather. And we were very close. We used to go walking together with his cane and with his walker and with all the things and the exercise and the pool. And my grandmother, we used to spend a lot of time. I just found when we moved, I found a letter that she had sent me with a very distinctive handwriting. It must have included a check. The check is long gone, thankfully. But she says, I want you to buy you something, sell something, go out and get a piece of pizza or something. Her family was, I mentioned this, some of you know already, her family was interviewed for Life magazine. My aunt, Aleha HaShalom, was on the front cover of Life magazine in the 60s when they were portraying the different world religions. So they were looking for a family, an Orthodox family, three generations of Orthodox Jews outside of New York. So they came to Scranton, to Mount Cobb, where the Fink family, my grandmother's maiden name was Fink, they had a farm, they still have. I went there as a kid. And my great-grandfather, Pa Fink, Olav HaShalom, so they had a mock seder. So there's a picture of him in Life magazine. I didn't bring it today. And so my grandmother was very rooted in a very strong Masorah. Her parents were Eastern European, but she was American-born. And she would bring milk, Chol of Yisrael milk, from their little, her father had a grocery store. They sold chicken feed, which is how they got in the chicken business. So she would bring milk to various rebbes by train in Williamsburg. So there was a very pious man. His name was the Kapishnitzer Rebbe. And the Kapishnitzer he knew my great-grandfather, and he would be one of the milk deliveries that my grandmother would make as a girl on the train. And so one day he told my great-grandfather that there's another Rav who came from Eastern Europe who has a son who needs a shidduch, and he thinks it would be a good shidduch. And that was my grandparents' shadchan from the milk deliveries. There's a lot more to say, but I never had the opportunity that she should come and visit us in Chicago, because by the time we moved here, she wasn't traveling very much. But we used to spend a lot of time with her, and sometimes we would send her things, you know, pictures of the kids. So to have her neshama be to have an aliyah today, be the yahrzeit today, my mother is going, the siblings, she's buried in New York in a cemetery that I've never been to. I don't plan to be there. So I've never been to the cemetery. It's somewhere off the LIE in Queens. It's some gigantic cemetery. But for me, this is my way of connecting, because I feel like her neshama is here, even though she's never been to our shir, but now she's kind of a quasi-member of our shir, and her neshama should have an aliyah. So today, we are focusing on an absolutely fascinating, incredibly profound introduction, which I only gave you the first two pages because it's totally not shayach that we should think we're going to get beyond these, so we're going to have to summarize the rest. There's no way. This is part of so many larger concentric circles of stories, which are amazing. The first one is the story of Shemitah in the modern settlement of Israel, which is itself, we take it for granted. We're going to observe Shemitah, I think in 2 years is the next Shemitah that we're going to observe. We take it for granted. There are Jews living in Israel. We have a state of Israel. We have to figure out what to do. 150 years ago, this was a halachic reality that was literally techias hamesim. People had not dealt with these halachos in centuries. No one observed this. Who ever heard of it? Shemitah? If you were to ask one of the Bali HaTosfos, or you to ask the Rambam says, I'll tell you the Hilchos Shemitah. He says, I never heard of anybody who observed this. Who is observing Shemitah? Who was there to observe Shemitah? Maybe 10 farmers, right? Maybe 100 people. Who's there? But then, in the end of the 19th century, it's literally, the halachas became from the dead to the living, and now became an actual practical shaila. So that's one whole background to this whole discussion. That's one. The second is the author of our discussion today. It's Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. We have a little bio on the inside of your paper. This also could be many, many shiurim, far beyond my knowledge, of the depth of who Rav Cook was and what he taught and what he meant. Rav Cook was literally a transformational figure for Jewish people. L'netzach netzachim. Our world is shaped significantly by the influence of Rav Cook. That on the top, by the way, is the picture of the Rechov Rav Cook. On the right side there is still the yeshiva. You can go, you can get a tour. If you happen to be in Yerushalayim, I highly recommend. It's a terrific short stop. It's right in the middle of town, right near Kikar Tzion. It's amazing. Last year when we had the privilege of the special Dan Steele's price mistake on Air Canada, so I took Chaim and Ilan with me. We stayed right near here, first time we ever went. So we went to Davin, and they had a minyan in this Beis Medrash, Rav Cook's actual Beis Medrash. So we went to Duchen. So I was too scared to go up to the top. But he was, how old is Chaim now? 13, 12, 14, whatever it was last year. So it was 14. So he went up because the guy said we should go up to the top where the Aron Kodesh is. There's a little beam. I said, I can't go up there. It's too scary for me. I'm going to stand here in the front. That's fine. But Chaim went up. And I said to him afterwards, I said, so what was it like davening there? So he said to me, he said, I duchen in the same place as Rabbi Cook. You could actually go there. The plaque in the back to Harry Fischel is still there for sponsoring the Beis Medrash. It's an unbelievable thing. The whole thing is exactly like it was. It's tremendous. So, as you see, Rav Cook, of course, just al regel achas, he came from Europe in 1904 to Yafo. He ultimately settles Yerushalayim. We're not going to talk about Rav Cook biographically today because that would be way too long. So we're going to get more into the essence of what he's writing. But approaching 1910 was a very significant time, because that was the new Shemitah since Rav Cook had arrived in Israel. Rav Cook arrives in Israel in 1904, just after that Shemitah year, which was 1903-1904. Rav Kook arrives late in the year, 1904 into 1905. Yes?
How did they, if it's been in disuse for so long, how did they even figure out what the years were?
Oh,
they
should be doing that itself is a big controversy. How to, so this is the tradition. We follow, it's a long story, it's a good question, it's a tradition, and even that is Shana B'machlokas, the Gemara is Machlokas Tanaim, how to calculate the Shemitah years vis-a-vis Yovel. So there's a very big machlokas about this. There's also a, there is a calendar conundrum in general about the 2,000 years ago about how to calibrate the Gregorian calendar and the Jewish calendar. Let's go with the traditional accepted count of what Shemitah was. So I'm going to pass around two things. One is, this is a little kuntris that I bought many years ago in this Beit HaRav that I mentioned before in Rav Kook's house they published. This was when they had, probably two Shemitahs ago, or three Shemitahs ago, 15, 20 years ago, they put a little collection of letters of Rav Kook's all about Shemitah. Because, as I mentioned at the beginning, Shemitah began to be a halachic discussion 30 years before. But as the yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael is growing, as more pioneers are moving there, it becomes more and more acute. The issue is affecting more and more people. Now, how can you take a settlement which could barely sustain itself in its current state and have people take a year off of work? This was a very, very serious question, very serious problem. So this is a collection. You can just flip through it on this side. The other thing I'm going to pass around on the other side, this is an interesting volume. This is called Kruzei Ra'aya. These are different Pashkevilim. You know, today, Pashkevilim have a certain connotation to them. You walk around in Yerushalayim, you see the big placards, you know, who's in, you know, most of them are who died. That's one set of Pashkevilim. And then the other ones are various proclamations of various kinds, not always signed by notable and reputable people. Some of them are just guys with printing presses, so they can print whatever they want, and who's going to stop them? But Rav Kook actually signed many Pashkevilim, many Kolkoris about many topics. So this is a guy who collected like 100 different placards, open letters that were posted around Yerushalayim. So if you were living 100 years ago, 85 years ago, so you would be walking the streets, you would see this. So this is a collection of Kolkoris, and this is one of them. This is going back to the previous Shemitah in 1903-1904. It's Rav Kook's Kol Kore. It's a fundraising letter. Help support the Shemitah farmers. Because if people are going to be out of work for a whole year, now today there are other arrangements in addition to these kinds of things like Oats or Besdin and others, but so they needed funds. These people, they could barely feed their children as it was, you know, when they had a good year. So this is, you just pass this around, you can take a look, you can flip through it. This is a collection of Kolkoris, and that one is specifically about Shemitah. So it's coming Shemitah, Rav Kook is living in the land, and this is the question, you know, you ask, how do they keep track of Shemitah? Well, where did the halachos of Shemitah come from? How did they develop? Because they don't appear in Shulchan Aruch. There is no Shulchan Aruch for Hilchos Shemitah, because it wasn't Lamaisa. Rav Yosef Karo lived in the 16th century. He lived in Tzfat. They had, you know, a little bit of discussion about Shemitah, and he's going to figure in this discussion a lot, but it's not barichas, it's not at great length, Shemitah.
Weren't there still elements, though, in terms of just keeping track of the dates? There are elements of it that are, you know, in terms of Yovel and debts. And
yes.
That apply in Chuslar
so
as
they,
well.
Yes, so there was a tradition, but there is some controversy about that. Years ago, 2,000 years ago, there was some controversy how to calculate exactly what the Shemitah is. But this is the, yes, so David is pointing out that there is an afkamina for Shemitah for us, even in Chutzlaritz, even if Shemitah b'zman hazeh, you know, even if it's derabanan, like the Rambam's opinion, but there are still ramifications, let's say, for the annulment of debt, we call Shemitah's ksafim. It's a, by the way, it also comes up sometimes, even for us, today, when it comes to produce, you could be in Village Marketplace, and you'll find sometimes Jaffa oranges or other produce from Israel. So there is an afkamina from Shemitah and, you know, these things. We once had an issue where there was a bottle of wine. I was in a particular place, and I looked at the bottle of wine on this hashgacha, and it said it was Otzer Besdin, which means it has wine that has the sanctity of Shemitah on it. But every fruit and vegetable of Shemitah has an expiration date. You can't use it after a certain point. The Gemara says there's a din that once it's, you know, it's supposed to be out there for people to take, poor people, anybody wants to take. What happens when it's out finished out there in the field? You can't find anything else. So the Gemara says, the din says, Mishnah, that you have to take it out of your house. You can't go outside and store lots of fruits because it's hefker, belongs to anybody. You can't just stockpile it in your fridge. Once it's finished from the outside, you have to take it out. It's called beer, shasa beer. So it's a machlokas whether you have to burn it or you have to just put it on the street. Anybody wants to take it. So I'm looking at this bottle of wine. I'm like, oh my gosh, this wine has the sanctity of Shvius. I'm sitting in America. The wine has sanctity of Shvius, but it's a year later. It's well past the shasa beer. So can you, let's say you're at a Seder and you just drank Dalet Kosos of this wine. What do you do now? Because you have to get rid of this wine because it's from Shemitah. So this happens, Lamaisa. Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva that if you didn't know and it was an accident and, you know, it happened already, so then you don't have to drink your Dalet Kosos again. But L'chatchila, you know what happens. And we once had a discussion about this. Someone from here, they took their bottles of wine outside to the street in Devonshire, and they made it hefker in front of three people. And then they took it back inside. Okay. But the idea that Shemitah is still pertinent, even in Chutz Laaretz, is also important to keep in mind, both on the Shemitah's Ksafim side, and sometimes in the halachas in terms of the observance of Shemitah. What's that? Yes, Esrogim, it comes up, Lulavim and Esrogim. Yeah. So, all of this is a whole world, in addition to what we're not going to talk about today at all, which is the second part of this volume, which we're introducing today, called Shabbos Haaretz. Rav Kook has a mavo to Shabbos Haaretz, 60 pages, about a very specific controversy related to Shemitah. What is the biggest halachic controversy related to Shemitah? Anybody know? That's right. Mechira. Heter Mechira. This is the biggest controversy. It already started in the time of the Beis Yosef, whether even if you sell it to a non-Jew, does that uproot the sanctity? Is that Mafkia, the Kedusha of Shvius? So this Machlokas about whether you can sell the land to Arabs or non-Jews, Arabs are non-Jews, or other non-Jews, but primarily the local non-Jews you're looking for are Arabs. So that became a huge debate before Rav Kook came to Israel, between Rabbanim in Europe. And then it became a further debate in Israel. Some of the letters in that little green kuntras going around that you'll see relate to this issue of Heter Mechira. So Rav Kook spends 60 pages in the beginning of this book developing and explaining and fortifying the legitimacy, the validity of the Heter Mechira. Rav Kook was a proponent of the Heter Mechira. At the same time, Rav Kook was also a proponent of not relying on the Heter Mechira. Says, if you can avoid relying on the Heter Mechira, if you're able to hold yourself to a higher standard than the average ordinary person, kol hakavod. One of those letters there points out, he was writing to a group who asked Rav Kook, is it proper to be machmer on yourself and say, I'm not going to rely on the Heter Mechira? So Rav Kook says, it's a mitzvah not to rely on the Heter Mechira on one condition, that you don't cast aspersions on the people who do. Which to me was a very powerful message of how to navigate life in general and Chumras Bechlal. You know? It's a very powerful message. Yes, it's a mitzvah to be Mahadir, whether it's a proper place to be Mahadir. If that's your level, it's a mitzvah to be Mahadir. And yes, it's true that there are certain heterim that people find on Google that are absolutely baseless. There's no such thing, as they say in Yiddish, Nishkeshtoigen, Nishkefloigen. There's no such thing as this heter. So there's no mitzvah to respect that heter. But there are plenty of heterim that are substantive and very reasonable and rooted in traditional halachic sources. So if you want to be machmir, gesuntahit. But Rav Kook says, you have to understand, you shouldn't poke holes in the people who rely on the heter. Yeah.
Is this like selling chametz?
In certain respects, it's like selling chametz. It's a lot more complicated than selling chametz.
Okay, so the idea that...
It's something called a harama. Harama is a legal fiction where, you know, you talk about the same thing. The Mishnayos talk about the following. Let's say you're a farmer. Growing up in Baltimore, there was a family. Their name is Gutman. So they owned a cattle business. They called it lager. Why is it called lager? Because when their great-grandfather came to America, he said it's like going to Golos. So what did Yaakov Avinu said? Lager ba'aretz banu. We're just coming lager. We're just coming to be temporary. So they had a cattle. They still have it. I don't know what. These were boys from my brother's age in school. Their family has a cattle business. So they had this din. The Mishnah says in Bechorus, you have a cattle business. So you have a cow that gives birth to a firstborn calf that has Kedushas Bechor. So what are you going to do with that bizman hazeh? You're going to have to wait for it to get a mum, and then you're going to, that's crazy. So the Mishnah says, I have a great eitzah for you. Find a guy and create a partnership with a guy. So it turns out that this family, they had a guy in Pennsylvania near their farm who they had a partnership with. And this way, none of their cows ever had a problem of bechor. And then when the old guy died and his son took over, he said, my dad had this paper with your dad. Do we need to write a new paper? He had a document. It wasn't just $5. They had a shtar that this guy was a shutuf in their cows. That's a harama. Now, it's important to note, this is also just a side note, it's important to note that haramas have a very important context. Here's the question. Is a harama, is that a dilution of Jewish observance of closeness to Hashem? Or is actually maximizing our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'll give you another harama. David referred to earlier to something called Shemitah Sesafim, where in the Shemitah, all the debts are annulled. Hillel, he found that there was a problem, because what happened 6 months before Shemitah, or a year before Shemitah? That's right. There was a credit freeze. So Hillel says, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make something, an institution called a prusbul. What's a prusbul? A prusbul says all the debts that are enumerated here, they belong to the Bezdin. The Bezdin can collect them, not subject to Shemitah's Karka. That's Shemitah's Ksafim, that's the din of a prusbul. So is a prusbul a shortcut? Is that, so to speak, a legal fiction to decrease our connection to Hashem, our devotion to Yiddishkeit? Or is it actually maximizing a different religious value? What's that? The mitzvah of Im Kesef Tal Ve'esami, of lending money. So it's one, in one respect it's a kula, but in another respect it's a chumra. You're trying to promote the Torah's value of lending money. It's the same thing here. In terms of Kedushas Bechor, you're trying to actually promote the sanctity of Kachim. Because what would happen if you had behemoths that had Kedusha running around today? You would not be able to care for them properly. You wouldn't be able to maintain their sanctity. So Mechiras Chametz, in the old days, it was because, who did Mechiras Chametz?
Liquor. Wasn't
yes. You had poor Jews, they had no ability to earn a living except for these very specific opportunities. And one of them was, you own a kretchma, you own an inn. So you pay the local, you know, feudal lord to have an inn. You pay the porits, you have an inn, and you sell brunfen, you sell the schnapps to the wayfarers, whoever's coming by. So what happens if you have to throw all your liquor into the sea, into the local river? You'd be broke. The porits would haul you off. So it was to enable people to have chai nefesh. So they instituted mechiras chametz. So Rav Kook, in the discussion about this, this is the whole story about the heter mechira. Rav Kook discusses at length in the after the Hatama that we're going to learn briefly, in the Vizos L'modoi, before the Mavo, which you don't have in your packets, here in Shabbos Aretz, he says, look, if we had the ability to observe Shemitah L'mahadrin, that's what we would want. That's what we're looking for. But we have two values in front of us. We have the value of Yishuv Haaretz and the value of observing Shemitah. If we can find a way to create a legal fiction that is based in Halacha that can enable us to fulfill Shemitah, for some people, that's what they got to do. He says, I'm dealing with people in Chutz Laretz, not just in Israel, people who are going to be investors. Think about it. Guys like Rothschild and others who are buying this land in the end of the 19th century, they're going to invest in a vineyard. You're going to come to some German banker and say, give us $1 million to invest in Palestine, whatever you're going to call it, in 1908. The guy says, I'm not going to do that. My investment is going to go down the drain in 2 years. Rav Kook says, we need to tell people, invest in Israel. Send money. Support these farmers. So part of that is the heter bechira, not as a, not, it's not religious minimalism. That's the misunderstanding. A lot of these kulas, they're kulas in one area, but they're not because people are looking for kulas. The rabbanim are not looking for kulas. They're looking for chumras. They're looking to get more people to buy land in Israel. They're looking to get more people to do farming in Israel. Yishev haaretz. That's what they're looking for. So that's a whole nother conversation, which is not for today. So now we come to this fantastic, incredible introduction that Rav Kook writes to the Shabbos Haaretz, which is Rav Kook's compendium of the laws of Shemitah. And it's organized by prakim, by topics, by seifim. So he tells you exactly what are the laws in terms of the land. Yes.
Missing something. Isn't Shemitah the point of Shemitah that the land itself is supposed to raise?
Great question. Okay. This is part of the complexity of why Shemitah is different than Mechiras Chametz.
Oh, okay.
The Pasuk says, Vashvias tishmetena unetashta. You should, a land should be fallow. So the question is, how do you interpret that? Mm-hmm. Is the focus that the land should be fallow? And then it doesn't help. You give it to a guy. The guy is going to work the land. Doesn't help you.
Right.
Or do you say, no. The main purpose of Shemitah is that you, a Jewish person, should not work the land. If somebody else wants to work the land, gives them to hate.
Okay.
That's part of the question. Is the mitzvah that the land should rest?
Right.
Or is that you should not do work? This is part of the question in the general process of harama. When you do these legal fictions, Rav Schachter likes to say, there's a difference between doing a legal fiction to avoid an isser versus to fulfill a mitzvah. It's not proper to do a legal fiction to miss out on a mitzvah. Yes,
you could actually come with the non-Jew hiring the Jews
right.
to do the work.
Oh,
so
that's
kind of either way.
Oh, so the truth is though, Rav Kook points out when they discuss the Hetem Mechira that there are actually a lot of limitations on the specific labor that a Jew is allowed to do, even when they rely on Hetem Mechira, which is one of those letters in that kuntris where Rav Kook writes to the people who are observing Shemiyas, to the Hetem Mechira. He says to them, look. You know, we, the Rabbanim, set out what pu'ulas, what avodas hakarka is mutter, because it depends. If the thing that you're doing is a av malachan shmita, so to speak, or is it a tolda? Is it what we call difference la'avrui ilne? Is it for the purpose of growing the fruit, or to remove what would be destructive? So, depending on that, so if Cook has a letter in there to the farmers, he says, brothers, I'm begging of you, please. He knows they're not religious. He says, listen, the rabbis we worked to figure out what a proper heter is, don't go beyond the heter. The heter says, you have to hire non-Jews to do this labor. Please, don't allow Jews to do this labor in your field. That's one of the exact complications of the heter, was that just because, Rav Kook writes, just because you have a heter mechira doesn't mean Jews are allowed to do all the work. There's a difference between different kinds of avoda sakarka. So that's what he's telling the people. No, please, please respect the Heter Mechira, the non-religious people, he's telling them. Oh. So all of this is incredible background. We could spend many, many hours, as you can imagine, on this topic. But I want to start this introduction of Rav Kook to Shabbos Haaretz, which gets to the core of what it means to live a spiritual life, with two questions. The Torah indicates, already in the Chumash, Oz Tirtza Haaretz is Shabbos Oseha, Lo Aleinu, that exile, Golus, is a consequence of the lack of observance of Shemitah.
The first temple or the second temple period?
Both.
Okay.
Initially, Chazal identified with the first temple. The number of Shemitahs that had been neglected correlated to the number of years in the exile in the first temple. But it's a general assumption. The Pasuk tells us, there's no Shemitah, there's no land of Israel. Sorry. And I want to understand, and we're going to conclude ultimately to appreciate this, why is it that the consequence of not observing Shemitah is eviction, lo aleinu, God forbid, from the land of Israel? Obviously, there's some correlation in terms of the mitzvah satluyus ba'aretz, but it doesn't say that about Trumas. It doesn't say it about Meiser. It says about Shemitah. That's number one. Number two is, please God, it'll be in Yerushalayim, Mir HaKodesh, in 2 years, when it's the Shemitah, we're going to be sitting around, we'll have our shir. I don't know where we're going to have it. Does your apartment have enough room?
We'll make room.
Gevaldik.
We'll make room. Okay.
Lo olam, lo adam, lo omar adam, tzar li hamakam Yerushalayim. No one ever said there's not enough space. So when Mashiach will come, we'll come to your house. You're going to have a whole, Mara's going to put out a whole breakfast. So we're going to have on the side, though, in the kitchen, there's going to be a special garbage that says what?
Yes.
Pach Shmita. Anybody ever see this? Ever see this? You saw this. Pach Shmita. You ever see this? You saw it. Yes. There are a lot of peculiar dinim on Shmita, and that is one of them.
By the way, we also did Trumas and Meiser when we were in Israel because our grandson is in an agricultural yeshiva. We went out to the cornfield.
Oh my gosh.
And collected corn.
Mamas.
And we had to do our own Trumas and Meiser.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Rav Rimon tells a story that he once was Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon from Gush, from the Halacha Institute in Gush, from Alon Shvud. He tells a story. He was once in Manhattan. He was in New York for a fundraising trip. So he went to a bodega to get something to eat. So for those who have ever been to Manhattan, you know, like on the Upper West Side, they have these little corner stores with the fruit stalls out on the street. I don't think we have it in Chicago so much. Do we have? I don't think so. It's a Manhattan thing. In the city, every corner block, you have a guy who has the shtickle flowers and he's got the fruits. So Rav Rimon describes he goes to one of these bodegas and he picks up an apple because he's hungry. And he looks at it and he says, does this have a shiloh of Trumas and Meisters? He says, no, we're in Chutzlaritz in New York. You don't have to worry about that. He says, maybe Orla, Suffolk Orla and Chutzlaritz. Shmita, do you have to worry about? He says, no. He said, by the time he finished thinking about it, he wasn't hungry anymore. He put it down. He didn't eat it. He left. You're missing all the mitzvahs in Chutzlaritz. In Israel, you get all the mitzvahs. So this din, why do you have a pach shmita? Because there's a special gezeras hakasav. The Gemara learns lo achla v'lo lehefsid. You're not allowed to destroy peiros shvius, which is why Rav Kook writes that havdala motzoi Shabbos. I don't know if anybody knew this. Havdala motzoi Shabbos. If you use shmita wine, Rav Kook thinks even though many of us have a minig motzoi Shabbos to have extra wine spilling over as a siman bracha according to the Gemara, should not do that with shmita wine. Because what happens to the wine that we have spilled over? It goes in the sink. He says, "Lo achla v'lo lehefsid." You shouldn't throw it away. So why do we have a pach shmita? Because sometimes you have a little bit of leftovers. You don't want to throw it in the garbage with all the other dirty, soiled items. So you put in the pach shmita, and then it rots. And once it rots, then you throw it away. Why is this such a din? Lo achla v'lo lehefsid. And then there's din lo achla v'lo leschor. You can't do business with it. It's my personal property. Why shouldn't I be able to do business? There are a lot of interesting dinim that are distinct from other dinim in Kol Torah Kula. They're very unusual. So I want to understand, what is it about these dinim that express the goal and the character of Shemitah? So let's start. Rav Kook asks a very profound question. It's kedai that we should live our entire life just to learn this one line. It's no question. He wants to know something very simple. What's life all about? What is life all about? Go to line 12. I'm going to start with line 12. We're going to move around a little bit. He says, "Hachayim, what is life? Al pi erech ho'elokius shebohem." You know how you measure life? According to the godliness of them. To the Ribono Shel Olam, to the godliness, the spirit of them. That is what life is all about. Line number 6, go up to 6. Shehachayim shavim heim es erkam rak ba'os amida shehim Elohim. Life is only worth living to the extent that it is godly, that it is Elohim. V'chayim she'inam Elohim einam shavim la me'uma. Life which is not a godly life is not worth anything. Period. Nikuda. That's the end. It's a powerful statement.
So you're saying that people who aren't Torah observant, people who don't observe mitzvot, I have a hard time with that.
So let's drill down to what Barbara's saying. Does it say a life that does not have mitzvot?
No.
What does it say?
It's godliness.
Godliness.
But we are all born with a certain sense of God. godliness in us. Oh. There are people who say that they don't believe in God, but do they really, do we really say that their white right life is worth nothing?
So Dr. Tversky answers your question. Dr. Abraham J. Tversky. He says, I've met a lot of people. Remember, he had a psychiatric practice that treated tens of thousands of people, most of them not Jewish. He writes in one of his books, he says, I've met a lot of people, not Jewish, not religious, who are deeply spiritual people. They lived godly lives. They could be, by the way, they even said they were atheists. Rav Kook is talking about godliness, spirituality, at its core. Chaim Elokim.
Unfortunately, the reverse can be true also.
Yes, and that is what he also writes in that book. He says it's possible to be religious, lo aleinu, and of any religion, including the Jewish religion, and not be spiritual, and not have Chaim Elokim, a spiritual life. I can't say it because it's horrible. You listen to the news now, and what you hear on the news, the kinds of lives that unfortunately some people are making choices and getting stuck with, whether they're religious people or not religious people, the things that you're listening to, shomu shamayim. Shomu shamayim. And then the opposite is true. You know, and I have to tell you, I went to a Levaya this week. And I don't do generally Levayas because it's not, I can't, whatever. So I went to a Levaya this week because they have a Kohen box. So I sat in the Levaya. It was the first time I had a good cry at a Levaya in a very long time. Who was the Levaya for? A young man who used to sit in the back of Chove, who I never, to my busha v'chlima, I never really spoke to him. I never really addressed him. Some will remember, he was a young man who was pushed by an older, not older, but a Russian gentleman with a beard. This was a paralyzed young man. I'm sitting in this Levaya listening. It was an unbelievably spiritual Levaya. Who stands up at the end of Levaya? The music therapist who flew in from Nashville, not Jewish at all. He ignored Simcha Frank and he took out his guitar in the middle of the Levaya. I'm sitting there. There's a Levaya for a 22-year-old boy who 10 years earlier had been paralyzed in a car accident and 20 years earlier had been born with a heart defect. And this Levaya, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what is life? Life is Chaim Elokim. The people are talking about how this boy, I'm embarrassed. I walked by him. I didn't realize he could communicate, not on Shabbos, but during the week. He communicated with his eyelids and a computer screen. That Levaya was such a deeply spiritual experience. Half the speakers of the Levaya were not Jewish. But it was, what is the Or Ein Sof? What does the Ribbono Shel Olam want from us? What kind of a life do we lead? What is the core of our life? It was such a powerful wake-up call. Like, what really matters? So the ideal, of course, is that Shmiras, Torah, and Mitzvos should lead us to, should enable us to live Chaim Elokim. But it's not a guarantee. You know, the Gemara says that learning Torah is like a psalm. It's like a potion, medication. It could be Sama Chaim, but if you misuse it, it could be Sama Mavis. So to your point, Chaim Elokim is the goal. So we have to make sure that everything that we're doing, our entire Yiddishkeit, is really tapped into the Chaim Elokim. And we can see that there are people out there who are not religious or not Jewish who also have an incredible spark of Chaim Elokim. And then we see people, lo aleinu, we listen to the news and we hear that there are some people who they have totally abandoned living a life of elokus. And they are just abusive and selfish. And they have destroyed their tzelem elokim and they've destroyed lots of people around them. So that exactly is the point that Rav Kook is driving to, is that it's not about particular mitzvos. It's about, are my life decisions based on elokus? And that doesn't mean that a person, Adrabba, Rav Kook would argue, doesn't mean a person should lead a monastic lifestyle. But what it does mean is that when we make decisions, and halavai, we should all live up to this, that every decision be a reflection of Chaim Elokim. You know, do I go to this do I go to this event? Well, how does it relate to the Elokus, the spiritual core that I have? How do I react to this text? Where do I spend my time, my money? All these questions, that's what really is going to express how we live our lives. That's where it shows. Not, you know, not just what we put on the bumper sticker of our car. It's how we lead our lives. Rav Kook says, a life that's devoid of spirituality is worthless. It is. It's totally worthless. But then you can go to a Levaya and you hear, I'm telling you, half the speakers were not Jewish. You have a woman who gets up at this Levaya from a school, one of the local schools where they help children, young people with never such severe disabilities. And she describes how much sunshine he brought to other people and how he smiled this young man to other people and how she's trying to teach that to other people. Is that not a spark of Elokus Yisbarach in this world? That's deeply, it's deeply a Chaim Elokim. It's tremendous. It's powerful. I mean, I was so moved. There was one interesting point when the music therapist struggled to get to the high notes, so he asked the woman who was helping him, so she helped him get to the high notes. I was in the other room, when, you know, that's ready. I'll leave that. But says Rav Kook, where are you going to find this? Where are we going to find the Chaim Elokim, the spiritual core of our lives? He says, you know where? Go back to line 12. He says, it's not Einam is galam ela yachid ela ba'os amida shum is amitz lios nishav b'chol avayos b'soch yuso shel klolos ha'uma. You're going to find it in the totality of the Jewish people as a whole, as an ummah. Klal Yisrael as a whole reflects the ideal of godliness. That's where you're going to find godliness. Each one of us as an individual, we're striving to bring out godliness. We're approaching. It's our life goal. We may get there. We may get there to some degree. We're going to continue to push the needle forward and forward. But you know where you'll see it in its fullest expression? It's in the Jewish people as an entity. This is a deep spiritual and Kabbalistic idea that I don't fully grasp, or it's hard for me to articulate what this means. It's based on profound Torahs. But the idea that there's a difference between the individual and the collective. Just use this room as a microcosm. Think about all the values, all the positive qualities that could be in the world. Charity, chesed, tefillah, Talmud Torah. Maybe each one of us, and I'm just using this as a mashal, each one of us has a component of it. But together, in the totality of this room, we have an unbelievable tapestry of people do different mitzvahs, masim, tovim, kochos, chesed, gvura, teferes, all of it, bichlal. So what am I going to try to do as an individual? I can get a piece of it, but the more I attach myself to the klal, the more I'm going to find it. This is, he says, is the teva of the general neshama of the klal Yisrael as a whole. Go to line 15. Teva ha-neshama ha-klolis, the nature of the collective soul of Knesset Yisrael, hu Elokiusa. The soul of the Jewish people, that's the collective spirit, that's the neshama. The neshama of klal Yisrael, that is its godliness. Hashem Yisbarach kivyachol, the energy of Hashem is expressed in the collective neshama of Klal Yisrael. That's where it's found. In the not in one person, but in the entire entity. And he says, that does not come from specific actions that we do as individuals. It doesn't come from our schusim. It becomes, that's the expression of godliness, that's the chosenness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And because it is not due to our merit, you could have every single Jew abandon Judaism completely, but that godliness will never be destroyed. It may be covered. It may be neglected. It may be damaged. But it will never be broken. It's a permanent fixture of godliness in the world. That's the soul of the Jewish people as a whole. So what do we need to do? It's like a diamond. You could leave it in a pot of, you know, you can leave it in the ground where it's full of mud. Or you could leave it in, you know, in a dusty bin somewhere, and it's going to collect dirt, or you can polish it. You could shine it. You could clean it. You have like a, what are those things? Pfft, they spray water on it or air on it. I don't know how they, this solution, you clean it up. So So he says, that's true for the collective neshama. Our goal is to make sure that we're polishing that spiritual quality of the Jewish soul, and every person can play a role. Because each of our neshamas is part of, connected to the neshama klolis. So now, says Rav Kook, that's the goal. To lead a spiritual life. And the spirit is found in the collective neshama of all of Klal Yisrael. And our goal is to burnish that, is to shine it, to make it beautiful, and to connect to it. To connect to the neshama haklolis. But we have a challenge. We all know it. You know what the barrier to doing that is? Go to line 25. You know what the barrier to that is? It's called everyday life. That's the problem. It's a challenge. He says, halfway down line 25, Ein chaye hachol. Everyday, secular, mundane living, yecholim lohutziyam en hakoach alapoal. Everyday living doesn't enable us inherently to bring out our godliness. Rather, chayim eila b'mahumasam. This life, 26, in its mahuma. You know what mahuma means? The running. The rush, the moving, and this is before they even had smartphones. Hatakufos, mastirim, they disguise this rush of life. Mastirim emes hahod haruchani shalaneshama elokis. And it blocks, line 27, umaakvim, and it impedes as hazrachas ora haboyer vayosher. It impedes the light. So what do we need to do? If we're going to bring out, what's that? What do we need to do? Slow down. What's that? And take a break. Take a break. Right? There are people who they're stuck in this mahuma 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can't get away from it. And he says, the pressures of life, and he alludes to this. He says, the competition. Everybody needs to eat. Everybody needs to feed their family. Everybody wants to get ahead. Everybody wants to accomplish. So those are all important things. But they come at a cost. There's a values cost. If that's the only thing we're doing all the time, all the time. So he says, you know what we need? He says we need, last two lines, Nesinas revach shel hafsaka v'hisnarus. Whew, we need to take a breath. We need to take a step back. Mi mahumas hachayim harigila, from the regular everyday pressures of life. So you know how we do this? Top column. Hayachid, every individual is going to take a break. How do we do this? When does the individual take a break? That's it. The greatest gift, says Rav Kook. Misnar michay hachol lisnaer. What a beautiful imagery. It comes like a lechadodi. Hisnari me offer kumi. Awaken. Shake off the craziness of the week. There's nothing like that feeling of walking in to Kabbalah Shabbos on Friday night saying, Zeu. Zeu. Now, the truth is, I suspect there are people in this room who gets that. I work on Shabbos, most Shabbos, so I don't have the same feeling. But what is that like when you walk in Friday night and say, Zeu, Gamanu, Skvaldik, right? That's B'chol Shabbos. Says Rav Kook, Ba Shabbos Ba Menucha. Shabbos is the time that we recalibrate our lives and we ask ourselves, are we living spiritually? Well, one aspect of spirituality is just spending time with family. The family bonds are spiritual bonds. So even people who are not religious, they're not Shomer Shabbos, Kados Mechalalo, not yet. But so many people, they light Shabbos candles. That brings a certain measure of tranquility, of awe, of menucha. Many people, they're not observant, they sit down, they have a Shabbos meal. I don't know if they call it a Shabbos meal. Some people, but isn't that Chaim Elokim? That says, take a step back and have dinner with your family. Right? That's a spiritual value. That's Chaim Elokim. That's the gift of Shabbos. That we step back and we say, am I leading a spiritual life? Because during the week, when can you do that? How can you do that? So you have, if you can chop, you have the windows of Shachris, Mincha, Maariv to recalibrate, but to really take 24 hours a day and go to sleep not worrying about where you're going to run the next morning? except to worry which minion has the best bal tefila. Where am I going to the cholent, right? So he says that's chayim elokiim. And so now go to line 9, says Rav Kook, es osa pu'ula. If we had more time, if we had maybe about 5-6 hours, we would do the whole piece, line by line. The last piece, just the way he describes Shabbos, he says, es osa pu'ula shashabbos po'as kol yachin, the same effect that Shabbos has on the individual, po'elis hi hashmita al ha'uma bechlala. That's what Shemitah does for the whole nation. So you know what you need to do on Shemitah, says Rav Kook in the last three lines? You have to have some very peculiar laws. You know what you need to do? Go to the end of line 35. Ein chilul kodesh shel kapdonos rechush prati. We don't have any desecration of the national space of godliness by somebody saying, this is mine. The minute you talk about property rights and possessions and mine and yours, we're back in the weekday. That's not spiritual values. That's not sharing. That's not meaning. That's not godliness. That's mine and yours. So you know what we do on Shemitah? We say everything is hefker. Zeu. It's hefker. And if the animals can't eat in the field, you can't stockpile it in your fridge. Chemdas ha'osher. You know what happens when we start chasing wealth in the day-to-day? That comes through business. So you know what we say? La'achla v'lo l'schora. No more business. Just think about what really matters in life. What's really important? How we lead our lives. Where are the chayim elokiim? Where are the godly values? So forget about doing business and forget about amassing wealth. And forget about, he says, la'achla v'lo l'hefsid. Just have an ayin tova. Just use what God gave it to you. Don't waste. Just be happy with what you have. Use it. That's why there's a pach shmita. That's why there's no business. The ha'adam chozer, last line, el tivo hara'anan. He says, people go back to their healthy spiritual state. That is the purpose of Shemitah. And you can understand, by the way, even further, how Yovel is going to fit into this in terms of sending out avadim. Well, wait a second. Why did you become an eved? You became an eved through the rat race of life that you didn't have and somebody else and you know, God forbid, and you got so clamped, so tedreit that you sold yourself as an eved after 6 years. You're so lost. The Rebbe Shem said, Avodayim, what do you mean? What are you doing as an eved to somebody else? So that's over. And all the fields go back to the people they belong to. Everything, it resets based on spiritual values. So Rav Kook then develops the idea that where does this neshama elokis of the community, where is it expressed? And it's expressed in the land. And that's where he started the whole thing. If you go back to the quotes of Zohar at the beginning, Umikam cha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Where are we one nation? Where are we one nation under God? In the land of Israel. Quotes the Zohar Kodesh, goy echad ba'aretz, vaday ba'aretz heim goy echad. In Chutz La'aretz, we're scattered, but in Eretz Yisrael, we are ima akron echad. We're one nation. I'm not sure if it's ima or ama. V'lo inon bilchudayu. He says, so the land of Israel, that's the expression of the unity of the Jewish people, of the collective. Well, the collective of the Jewish people are neshama. That's the neshama elokis. That's the spiritual entity. And if the purpose of Shemitah is to bring out the chayim elokim, what happens when we're not living chayim elokim, spiritual lives? Well, then, obviously, the land of Israel is not the appropriate place for us. Because if the land is a reflection of the totality of the soul, the totality of the communal soul of Klal Yisrael is Chaim Elokim. So those two are a perfect match. The Chaim Elokim, the spiritual center of our community, is resting, is Goy Echad Ba'aretz. But when we don't have people living Chaim Elokim, so then we don't belong in the land. And that's what the Torah says. So you could say, somebody should learn Shabbos Haaretz when it comes to Shemitah. Every 7 years, it's good to chazal Shabbos Haaretz, especially if you're in Israel. I would say it's good. But I would argue that every person should learn this Hakdama to Shabbos Haaretz. Because Rav Kook is getting back to the basics of why we exist. What are we doing today? What is our day going to look like today and why? The decisions that we make express whether we lead Chaim Elokim or not. Whether we're a nosin or a notel, where we're giving or we're selfish, whether we're sharing and kind and goodness, that's Chaim Elohim. So sometimes it's hard because we're caught in the everyday. So you know what we do? We need to remember that Shabbos is the springboard for that. Shabbos is the time to recalibrate our lives and make sure that we're living Chaim Elohim. And as Rav Kook said, the day-to-day is difficult, so we're going to fall down. We're going to make a lot of mistakes. But if we remember, eyes on the prize, what's the goal? What is real life, says Rav Kook? Real life is Chaim Elohim, is a spiritual life. So I would say it's a good thing that we learn Shabbos Aretz on a regular basis. Have a great day. Look forward to seeing many of you later tonight. Thank you for coming. Shkoyach. My grandmother Neshama should have an aliyah. Esther Baser Belio.